She became the first and only singer to be put under personal contract.
And then she got, in 1955.
Oklahoma, that's where I live. As I studied into this, I realized even though it was based on Oklahoma, it wasn't filmed here because there were too many wells and stuff. And it was supposed to look like it was a movie from 1906. Mm-hmm. And so they actually filmed in Arizona.
Welcome to the Sean Squad Society podcast with your hosts, myself, Cindy,
Doris,
and Madonna,
where we invite you to share in our enthusiasm and reminisce about all things Sean Cassidy.
From his teen idol days to his recent adventures back on the road again.
Please join us for the stories and memories that connected us to those happy days that helped create the Sean Squad Society podcast.
Shirley Jones is going to be 90 this year, and we want to celebrate that.
I mean, she's American treasure, Shirley Jones.
She is.
We just can't call her Shirley Jones. This is American treasure, Shirley Jones.
She sure is.
Six decades in acting and theater. The woman is like everybody's favorite mom.
She is.
I don't care what they say about Carol Brady. I say, and beautiful and talented. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we are going to dedicate this episode and salute the life of Shirley Jones.
Shirley
90
Jones.
90 whole years.
Yes, she's still going strong.
Shirley, we are privileged to do this for you.
And it is a privilege and an honor to make such a great career.
Review everything she did in her life, yes.
Yeah.
And to have so many talented, beautiful sons, too.
Exactly.
What an honor. What an honor.
Career, family, she had it all.
So, Cindy, you know, Shirley Jones, and we were going to have a little discussion about her. She was born in Pennsylvania. Her parents, I think, owned a bar or a brewery.
A brewery, if I could say that correctly.
Which kind of surprises me because I thought Pennsylvania was Amish country, and I didn't know they could have beer and breweries and things like that.
Yeah, so I didn't know either until I read about it.
Yeah, right there where she was born, there was the fact that they had one proves that they could.
Yeah.
And I guess from early on, she was doing like singing with her church.
Church, I think at school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's neat because we can listen to like, you know, Sean talk about that in all of his shows. And now when I go back and I'm reading about her, I'm thinking, you know what? That's why Sean told us that. Oh, he did appreciate that. He said that about his, you know, his parents or his grandparents.
Yeah.
Yes. Their history of his mother's side.
Yes.
Joneses.
He was sharing all of that with us, even the story. And there was this man, I think his name was John Fernley or something like that. He was like a casting director for Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah, I read about that.
So Shirley went to her casting call, and this man was so impressed.
But I think this wasn't planned. They went to New York for a vacation, and somebody suggested, hey, there's a casting call for Rodgers and Hammerstein. She didn't even know who they were at the time, but she decided to go to it.
Well, there you go. But he was super impressed, this casting director.
Yes.
And he was just all impressed, and he got in touch with Richard Rodgers.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, listen to this little girl here.
I know Richard Rodgers was rehearsing with an orchestra for an upcoming musical.
Yeah. He was out there rehearsing, and this guy says, I want you to hear this Shirley. And Shirley was so good that Richard Rodgers called his partner, Oscar Hammerstein.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I actually read a part about what, I guess it was in her book, and she said that she always really enjoyed singing, but she was never conceited over it. And she always gave credit to God for giving her that, you know, ability. And so I thought that was really sweet that she recognized her talent, but she didn't take it for granted. And then she said that she liked singing also because it made her mom happy. Her mom was very impressed with her voice as well.
And I learned that she took early voice lessons.
Yes.
So that's how she learned to sing that beautiful, I don't even know because I'm not a singer, but all those different ranges she could sing. She learned that early in her career.
She was quite young.
Yeah.
Well, she sang in the choir, and she was the youngest one in the choir to sing. So she's, like you said, Doree, she started at a very young age compared to most.
Yeah.
Right, right. So, but before the singing started, she wanted to be a veterinarian instead.
Yes, but there were times even in her life when she actually wondered, why did I go into show business? Maybe I should have, you know, kept the dream of wanting to become a veterinarian. So she went back and forth in her mind thinking, well, you know, maybe I should have taken that other road.
Yeah. And then, you know, later in life, it got easier for her because she chose to do her television series, which made her life easy for her.
Right at the time.
We'll talk about that. But, you know, it was hard. She wanted to raise her family. And and this whole thing, she was a sought after actress. And it was hard for her to act and do her raising her family and things like that.
And traveling,
She said that it would make her life easier, but she also knew what she had heard. And what she had heard is that if she were to do a sitcom like this, which she decided not to take the one with the Brady Bunch, but she chose this one because of the music that was going to go with, you know, the story and everything together. But she heard, and she felt like this was the truth, that if she went into one of these shows that continued like this, that she may lose her chance to be a big movie star.
It'll dampen, it'll typecast her. If she took the Partridge Family, that would type.
That's what she said.
They told her, you will be typecast for the rest of your career. But it was worth the gamble to her.
Yeah,
because she could raise her kids and she could be that mom. You know, she went on the set and she did that, but then she came home and she was that mother as well. And so it worked out for her.
That's right. Yeah.
So
let's back up and go to the first thing she tried out for was.
Right. Going right back to Rodgers and Hammerstein. So they put her on personal contract. Never before had anybody been
She became the first and only singer to be put under personal contract.
And then she got, in 1955.
Oklahoma, that's where I live. As I studied into this, I realized even though it was based on Oklahoma, it wasn't filmed here because there were too many wells and stuff, and it was supposed to look like it was a movie from 1906.
Mm-hmm.
And so they actually filmed in Arizona.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I read. Yep.
Because the landscape looked like what they wanted. They needed something to look more like that.
But I still feel a connection because it is called Oklahoma. And then they did show Claremore, which is 30 minutes from here. And, you know, there's so much I learned just studying into statehood and stuff and what the climax was to this movie. And it had to do with the statehood. And it had to do with, you know, the cowboys and how they.
Yeah, what was this about?
Well, the original Broadway production, it opened March 31, 1943. It was a box office hit, and they had like 2,212 performances. And it had been inspired, something to do with Love Boat. Do you guys know anything about that?
The only Love Boat I know is the Love Boat from the 70s.
Yes,
that's well, Captain Steuben.
Well, I know that Doris always has this in her head, so she knows a lot more than I do, so I just thought I would bring that up. But it even has like a 15-minute dream ballet in it where, you know, Lori's struggling with her feelings. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in just a little bit. But Rodgers and Hammerstein's, having set the standards and established the rules of musical theater, still being followed even today. It is set in a Western Indian territory, which is here in Oklahoma, just after the turn of the century. The high-spirited, you know, where the local farmers and the cowboys going against each other. And then it has the colorful background and it has Curly, of course. He's very handsome. He sings really well. And then it has Lori, the pretty farm girl. And then they play out their love story. And I actually really liked it. Although the road to true love will never run smooth, just like in this show, these two lovebirds are headstrong romantics. And so, you know, their journey is a bumpy road like everybody's. And it's just like going over an Oklahoma country road. The whole show is like that.
Yes.
And then they begin a new life, you know, in a brand new state. And that ends up being the climax of the movie. And that is Oklahoma. That is where I'm at. Territory.
Oklahoma. The main characters are Lori.
Lori Williams.
Yeah.
And the cowboy, Curly McLean.
Okay. And Gordon McRae played Curly, correct?
Yes.
And Shirley Jones was Lori. And,
yes.
And then it was a whole cast of other characters. I found it interesting that Eddie Albert, who went on to be on Green Acres,
right?
Was in it.
He was in there too.
I liked his character.
Yes.
It seems to always be some sort of traveling salesman.
There's a theme, right? There's a theme to these movies.
Yeah.
Back then, it was the traveling salesman that falls in love.
Yeah, and then the romance and the dancing and the singing and the con artist and the cowboys and the fights and the rivalry and getting the pretty girl. And, you know, we still have a little bit of that in the movies today.
Yeah. So you were talking that back in 1943, it started as a stage production. And then in 1955, it became a movie.
Yes. And I wondered, well, what's the difference? Well, the ending is the difference. You know, they use Judd in a different way in each one. He dies differently in each one, even though it's with the knife. One is, I don't know, but there's two different ways that they have him end his life with that movie and with the actual show and actually performance life stage.
I just want to talk a little bit about the character Judd. And I have this whole thing about, I saw Oklahoma as a little girl. I watched it, you know, you stay up late and you watch these old movies. And I was really taken by Shirley Jones. And we were talking about her beautiful singing voice, how she had that range. But I forgot what the plot was about. A few days ago, Cindy said, "What's Oklahoma about?" And I said, "You know, I really couldn't tell you." So when I watched it again, now I remember why I forgot.
Yeah.
The whole plot, I like the singing, but there's the love triangle. And I think there's a little bit to be said about the way Lori treated the men in her life. She had her suitor who was Curly. He really liked her. Curly likes Lori. But he wants to go to the dance with her. But Lori's kind of headstrong. And she's like, "Well, you wait till the last minute to ask me. I'm not going. I'm going with Judd." Well, Judd is like the farmhand. Not farmhand. The ranch hand.
He helps
them. he helps Lori and Aunt Ellen. And Lori kind of plays around with his heart. She asks him to go, knowing, I think it doesn't say it in the movie, but I think Lori knows he likes her. He wants to be with her. And she messes with him a little by going, well, you know, if Curly waits so long to ask me, I'm just going to ask Judd. Well, I thought that that wasn't very nice. And I guess in the 50s, it was a musical, and maybe I'm overthinking it, but I really didn't appreciate the way these women went around playing. Even Ado Annie, she played around with her man's heart. She was like kissing every guy that came
to town. She was confused. And she admitted it, though. She wasn't trying to be sneaky. She would say, well, I do this with this one, this one, but I can't help it.
At least she admitted it.
She did admit it.
Candid. And she was out there like, I'm just going to go and do it, and I can't help it.
I can't help it.
Even if my daddy did offer me up to the guy that had $50. You give me $50, bucks, you can have my daughter.
I thought that was rude. That was rude of the dad. I could not believe that.
He offered up his daughter.
It was sad.
So now you're starting to see the little things like in the 50s that were okay that I'm having a little trouble in 2024, like, what dad offers up their daughter for money?
Lori was drug-induced by that little bottle of potion that was sold to her. And her aunt even warned her, you really don't need to be wasting your money on that. But then she took off that lid because I guess like normal people, you know, with things that they may take or do, it would take her away and she just needed to relax. So she took off the lid and she smelled it and then she started hallucinating. And she started having a colorful nightmare. And then they, of course, had to add the tornado because it's, you know, Oklahoma and the wind. And and then, you know, that's what people see when they think of Oklahoma. So I didn't know what you girls would think about that piece of the movie. I think they could have left it out. But the more I think about it, you know, that actually is like reality where people do certain things and maybe the potion's going to take them away for a little bit. But it showed her who she really wanted to be with because it gave her that nightmare.
Right. And that's what he told her. That's what the character, the traveling salesman, he said, you smell the smelling salt, it'll let you know who you want to be with.
Yeah. You're right.
To answer your question, Dame, I think it's a good part of the movie. I just thought it was too long.
Okay.
I mean, artistically, it showed.
It was a big part.
It was very artistic. I mean, it was done so well.
It really was a big part of the movie, so I wanted to say something about it because of that potion there.
Yeah, it's just kind of
a big part.
The movie, I think Cindy said it best, the movie was not what we really thought it was.
Right.
No, it wasn't, because once you put more thought into it, it was more than just dancing around and singing and something beautiful to sit down and enjoy.
But did you notice in the book, too, Shirley said that the making of the movie turned out to be a nightmare for her because it wasn't what she expected it to be?
You're correct. I read that. Well, first of all, she was very uncomfortable with everything they made her do. Like, they had to use the wax on her above her lip. I guess they'd never done that before.
Yes.
And they went and yanked it off, and then they had to put ice back on it.
Right.
She just hated that. And she hated the number of hours. I don't think
I read
down,
it too, that it was long hours.
15 hours a day for 9 months.
Yeah, it was a long time.
That's crazy. And so I'm here watching this beautiful, I thought it was beautiful, this beautiful movie. And we don't realize what was behind the scenes and how much work they had to do just to give us that program.
Right. So she says she made up her mind not to be difficult. She went along with what they wanted her to do.
Yeah.
You know, she didn't like the upper lip wax because she said it came in darker after it came.
Yes, I read that too.
Yeah, so now it just grew in darker.
Yeah, so she didn't like
that.
That's a
warning for all of us.
I think it was a learning experience for her with this movie.
Yeah, but to me, that's practicing for 15 hours a day, that's too much. But as far as waxing the upper lip, oh, well, it's just what we have to do. You know, it's just life.
It's part of Hollywood stuff.
Yes.
So,
well, I even have to do that sometimes. So
she also had a crush on her co-star, Gordon McRae. She
did
had a crush on
now?
Him. Yep. She says working with Gordon McRae was heaven. She loved the script and adored the songs in the movie. But the long days, she wasn't sure about if she wanted to do that for the rest
of
her life. Yeah.
Yes.
It was a challenge.
Let's talk about the music a little bit. How about Oh, What a Beautiful Morning? Everybody knows.
Oh, what a beautiful morning. Oh, what a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way.
Darice, I went around the house singing that after watching it. I had to sing that just walking through my kitchen and everywhere. Pretty funny.
Because it's so catchy. It's contagious. You start singing it, and all you have to know is the first few chords, the first opening line, and everybody starts singing.
At the beginning, I know it starts, it's 15 minutes of just singing and dancing around. I don't think there are any other shows that have that in the very first 15 minutes.
And I think Rodgers and Hammerstein created this musical type movie.
Uh-huh.
This was a big thing back then.
Yeah.
So they kept doing that same thing over and over again with the other, with other movies.
That was their trademark. That was their stamp. They loved doing musicals. They loved it. It was a good movie.
Mm-hmm. It takes you back. I mean, there's good and bad, but... And guys, did you know that they, I guess, did Shirley actually come back to Oklahoma to celebrate the 100th birthday for the state?
Oh, I don't know, maybe.
I thought I had read that, but I may be incorrect.
Right, and one other little tidbit with Oklahoma, this show went overseas to Paris, and that's when she first met Jack Cassidy.
Oh,
who was cast in Oklahoma, you know, when they played overseas.
That's her first encounter. Okay.
That was her first encounter with Jack.
So, Dame, the last song I want to bring up, Oklahoma. Tell me you're not running around the house singing Oklahoma.
I will now. You just got it back in my head. I would sing it right now, but people would turn the podcast off.
I know every one of these songs, every time I mention one, they're singing it. And I can just hear everybody at the same time going, Oklahoma, okay.
Yep,
it's just such a great
Oklahoma,
song.
Oklahoma, where
the... It's such a
catchy song.
I'm not trying that.
Oh, no. Come on, Cindy.
She did another movie a year later called Carousel.
Carousel.
Right after Oklahoma.
And she hated all
it
the grueling work
too.
In Oklahoma. But 1 year later, there she is doing Carousel.
Yeah, 1956, she did Carousel.
Now, Cindy, I got to admit, I have never seen Carousel.
I haven't either. I've heard about it, but I haven't seen it.
It's another one with romance.
Exactly.
What's the storyline?
Yes, it is basically an American drama fantasy musical film based on the 1945 Rodgers and Hammerstein stage musical of the same name. And it was based off of another movie called Lilium?
It could be.
Something like that. It was based off another movie, and they just changed things with this production.
What's kind of the plot?
Well, this main character, Billy Bigelow is his name. He's a rough-talking, macho, handsome carousel barker, you know, at the
carnival.
Shout out at the carnival, So he meets an innocent mill worker named Julie Jordan. She lives in the small town of Booth Bay Harbor, Maine. And they fall in love, but they both get fired from their jobs. And Billy pays too much attention to Julie and gets a wrath of jealousy from the carousel owner, Mullen. And Julie, because she's violated a curfew or something like that, she's imposed by wealthy mill owner, Mr. Bascombe.
But in short, doesn't the husband die and there's some kind of plot where he gets more time with her?
Right.
Well, what I thought I had heard was that, and just seeing the little bit that I saw it, that like normal people, they had a strain on their relationship, and so they had to resort to other ways to get money.
Oh.
Is that true?
I don't know. I never saw it.
Well, it says Billy and Julie marry. They live at the Seaside Spa and Restaurant of her cousin, Nettie. Julie admits that Billy is frustrated and bitter because he can't find work, so he starts hitting her.
See, here's another, I'm telling you something about those. They're supposed to be fun. To me, yeah. Musicals are fun, exciting, upbeat. And now you got domestic violence.
Yeah, right?
They brought that in. Yeah, things were different back then. It was like some of it was almost okay.
It was. That's definitely true, Damon. In the mid-century, it was a different lifestyle, a different way of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I even remember watching The Honeymooners, and they made jokes of Ralph telling Alice he's going to knock her to the moon. Yes. So it was not as, you know.
Right.
So, yeah. So there enters domestic violence, and then what?
But Mrs. Mullins, who is the carousel owner, she hears of this and wishes to rehire Billy back, but only if he leaves his wife.
Oh.
Because she knows about the domestic violence. But Julie informs him that she's pregnant. So there's another plot twist.
Yes, and they have to find ways to, you know, take care of this baby.
Yeah, right. So Billy wants
to... They lost
to,
their jobs.
Yeah, he's happy that she's pregnant, but he doesn't take the work. Yeah, he doesn't take the work from her.
So he doesn't go back to the carousel at the carnival.
No, he secretly agrees to join his pal. His name is Jigger.
Oh, there you go. Anybody named Jigger, this is going to be...
Yeah, and they're going to be robbing. They're robbers.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so why did he choose that instead? I don't know.
Oh, easy money.
Easy money.
It's easy money. Come on, we just set up a few places. We can make some money.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's where they had to find other ways.
Right. So then apparently with the movie, during the clam bake on this island, Billy and Jigger sneak onto the mainland to, you know, do this robbery. But Bascombe, who is usually unarmed, this guy, doesn't have any guns, carries a gun, and the robbery is foiled.
Oh.
So they flee, and Billy leaves because the police are there. So Billy climbs on top of some crates or something like that, and they collapse, and Billy falls onto his own knife.
Again, falling onto who fell on their own knife?
There's violence in here.
didn't Judd fall on his? Yes, Judd fell
it was like
on
the
his
other
own
one.
Knife.
Yeah,
in Oklahoma.
And that was where they were different. The difference between the movie and the stage performance at the end was that knife.
Wow.
Yeah. So I guess back then you carried a knife and you fell on it.
Yeah, but
then that was it.
But he goes back and, you know, Julie sees that he's wounded. So she rushes him, you know, to get help. But he dies from his wounds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think it goes on to kind of have sort of, what's the Patrick Swayze movie where he dies? Ghost?
Ghost.
I think it kind of has sort of a ghost story to it.
That's
where
what it sounds like.
He comes back and he lives. He changes his life a little bit. He gets a redo.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets to live his life a little better. And I believe that's what I read.
Right. But then part of the movie, too, 15 years later, Billy's told he can return to Earth for one day to make amends for it.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
He gets to come back for one day and do a redo.
Yeah, right. But then he finds, you know, comes back and finds his daughter, Louise. Her name's Louise. She's scarred from the taunting because her father tried to commit a robbery. So without disclosing his identity to Louise, he makes himself visible, tries to raise her spirits, gives her a star that he stole from heaven. But the daughter doesn't know it's her father.
Right.
Yeah. Louise is frightened and she refuses the star, but Billy really wants to give it to her. So he slaps it on her hand. And she rushes in the house. She informs Julie of what happened, saying she did not feel a slap, but she felt a kiss. So I guess it's
so,
Billy's
like
ghost.
So, like I said, it's like the
it's
movie
like the same.
Ghost. They come back in spirit, and they are with the people that they love, and they're helping them. And this is his redo, his amends. Let's fix this for my
But his daughter can see him, but he makes himself invisible to Julie.
Right.
So she can't see him.
He does not want his wife to see him.
Right.
See, girls, I didn't see that part of it. So that might be why I didn't know that it connected with the Patrick Swayze movie at all.
Yeah.
But he comes back for his daughter.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't see
that. Basically wraps it up. And that, like I said, all these 1950s musicals kind of have a dark.
Yeah.
I mean, we got people falling on knives and dying and committing robbery.
I thought it was about a carnival. But even so, overall, it still gives you maybe not Carousel, but the one I watched with the Oklahoma and the Music Man just gives you that good warm feeling of back then, you know, in a good way. It doesn't have to be as ugly as some movies they make now.
You know why, Dave?
More talent.
Because they put in all that upbeat, beautiful Roger and Hammerstein music.
Yes!
They make these little dark plots and put all that great music over it.
Yes, there's always music with these. Well, singing, dancing, musical, now there's death. I mean, there is a soundtrack for it. There's two songs recorded for the film. It's called You're a Queer One, Julie Jordan.
Okay, that says something.
And another song called Blow High, Blow Low.
Oh, well, we'll walk away from that right now.
Oh, wait,
now.
No, let me correct that. Those were the two removed in order. You know, there was time constraints.
Oh, okay.
Those were the
choices.
Two songs that were removed from the movie. That's funny. There was a popular song from Carousel that we know from Sean's shows, and it was called If I Loved You. Sean sings it in his show.
Yes.
And the movie was performed by Shirley Jones and Gordon McRae.
Yes.
Okay.
If I loved you, time and again I would try to say all I'd want you to know. If I loved you, words wouldn't come in an easy way, round in circles.
Okay, another one. You'll Never Walk Alone. Everybody's heard of that one.
That sounds good.
Yeah, those are the two most popular ones for that
from
movie.
Carousel.
There's more on. Yeah, there's a list of them, but those are the two popular ones.
Yes.
Oh, wait, but I do want to mention one more thing for Carousel.
Okay.
Carousel opened on February 16th, 1956. And her and Jack ended up getting married August 6th of 1956. So when that movie came out, that's when Shirley and Jack became a union.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when Carousel was popular. So, okay, let's bring up the next movie, which is called Elmer Gantry. And this was released in 1960. And this one was the one where she won her Oscar.
Oh,
playing Lulu Baines. Lulu Baines. And I'll tell you a little bit about it.
She was Best Supporting Actress?
Yes, Best Supporting Actress. I'll tell you, too, like, who won some awards with this one. It was a drama. It wasn't a musical. This was a drama, so this was different for Shirley to be in. And it was about a confident man and this female evangelist. She wanted to go traveling, selling a religion, you know, to small towns.
Mm-hmm.
Another traveling-type movie. And they would go town to town to do this.
They have, like, tent revivals.
Yeah.
Back in the 30s, they had these
things
out. They're trying to rejuvenate towns with Christianity. And so they invite them to these big tents and have these revivals.
Right.
Well, girls, I think the best part of this whole movie was at the beginning when it said, beware to, you know, like to children that this is not the way Christianity is. And I know we're not talking religion right now, but that was really my defense in not watching the whole thing because it could give the wrong idea to people that there's a con in
right.
a pastor.
Yeah, so this is the plot of the movie. Elmer Gantry, who is the main star of the movie, is a hard-drinking, fast-talking traveling salesman. Of course, he's very charismatic with his personality, and he tries to sell this biblical passages and in a way to collect money. He's very...
Right.
How those evangelists always act. They're very powerful.
Powerful, yes.
To get money. They want to get your money. So he's drawn to this roadside show and this lady called Sister Sharon Falconer. She's the one with these tent revivals or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And he's immediately attracted to her and decided that, you know, he sweet talks her and he joins her on this tent revival tour.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Even the newspaper guy basically broke it down and called it a circus. He said this is simply just a circus.
Right, with just a tent revival in it.
Yeah. That's all it truly is.
Yeah.
It was if you look at it in simple terms, they took Christianity, put it on the road, made a show of it,
right,
and sold you on the concept.
But he's basically a con man, so he's conning his way into her good graces to join her. So this is basically what the movie's about.
Now, his backstory is he was a fallen minister because the man just can't stop philandering, drinking, and gambling.
Right.
He has his downside.
Okay, that's a good point, Doris. Maybe that's why, because he knows that he can't sell it because he likes all that stuff. And you really can't be an evangelist and be into all that.
But on the other hand, Dame, he's an excellent salesman. So
he's like,
I can use my gift of sales, and he figured out how to word it.
So it made it dark.
Yeah, you had Sister Sharon Falconer, who was the sweet, angelic, come with me and follow this passage and you'll go to heaven.
Right,
and
plus...
then you had him.
Yeah, then they're trying to convince the people in the tent that they must earn the money to stay open. And they give them this big spiel of, you know, donate to this church because it's worthwhile cause.
Right. Yeah.
Selling the goods to them.
And in this case, the goods was Christianity. Her role comes in halfway through the movie.
Prostitute.
Now, Elmer had his way with her. They were kind of lovers.
Yeah.
And her father basically threw her out of the house. And she had to go and become a prostitute.
Well, Lulu Bain sees this team together because she used to go out with Gantry.
Right.
Yeah. So she sees it that, but she's kind of mad about it because when they were younger, they had an affair. But Gantry didn't want to continue it. So now she's got this.
Because he was a philandering. He was not one woman man. And he loved to go and be with other women.
Plus, her father was a minister.
And her dad was a minister.
So this kind of fell apart, and Gantry took off and couldn't con her, I guess.
So Lulu decides she's jealous of Elmer and his relationship with Sister Sharon.
Because
whatever you say about the relationship, it was working. He had his style. She had her style. They were going to these towns, and they were bringing in people in these revivals. And that's what they were supposed to do. And they were doing it.
Right.
So Lulu, now, get a load of this. Elmer says, let's go bust up the brothel. Because now he's big shot. He's like, not only are we going to have tent revivals, we're going to clean up these towns while we're...
Right.
You cops can't seem to do it, but guess what? We can.
Mm-hmm.
Whose brothel does he go and bust up?
Lulu's.
Yep. So Lulu's, he sees Lulu, and he decides, let's just ship these women out of town. Don't send them to jail.
Yeah. But Lulu wants revenge against Gantry because he ran her out of Kansas, where she was living.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So guess what? How does she get her revenge? She sets him up.
Right, with some pictures.
She lures him back to the scene in the hotel and tells, because the newspaper man, he's not all on, he's kind of in the middle. He's like, I'm not liking this whole tent revival circus show you people put on. Because remember, he says he's not 100% Christian, but he's not atheist, and he certainly don't believe in devil. He's just not in all of it.
Right.
So he's like, why don't you set up this Elmer Gantry? He's not who he says he is. And she says, okay, I can set him up.
Yep. So she calls him, says, come on over. She's kind of be nice to him.
Mm-hmm. Seduces him.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets him in the room. And,
right.
And he doesn't quite go for it. And I think she's a little bit changing her mind until she gets to the part where she wants to really get the picture, the money picture. Because the guy is hiding across the street.
Yeah, and he's in
like,
the bushes.
I want the money picture.
Yeah.
So she gets the kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? She turns on the tears and says, I need money. I don't have anywhere to stay. And he hands her money not for being a John, to help her.
Help her out. Right.
But the picture says another story.
So the pictures go out.
All over the newspaper.
And Sharon, the minister, sees it.
Yep.
Yep. So she tries to bring money over to Lulu to pay her off for the negatives.
Yes. Now, Sharon, she's got big dreams. She wants her tabernacle. She wants a big church. She wants it. That's what she wants.
She's serious about it.
And she wants this, and she's been dreaming of it, and she wants to get that church going. And Elmer, he just wants to be Elmer. And so she takes this money because she will not have this ruin her dream. So she takes the $25,000 and she goes to pay off Lulu.
Mm-hmm. And they meet.
And they meet.
She only has like 3 scenes in this movie.
This is the third.
This scene. Is the third scene. Yes.
And she basically doesn't take the money.
No. I think she kind of laughed about it too, didn't she?
Laughed right in her face.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm not doing that.
I'm not doing that. She goes back to her room, to the brothel, and her pimp shows up.
Yes.
Beats the
I didn't like that part. Oh.
Slaps her to tomorrow tells her, you didn't take the money because you're still in love with Elmer Gantry. Mm-hmm. Just admit it. Well,
and she took it. She took the beating.
Laid there and took it. She didn't scream. She didn't cry.
Nothing.
And I think that's where the Academy Award winning performance comes in.
Mm-hmm.
She took her beating.
She took it. Yeah.
Well, guess who comes?
Yeah, comes to rescue her. But with that movie, of course, I expected something cute. I didn't even look into it before seeing pieces of it. And, you know, it's an artist. And maybe that's why she won the award, because it was something that was shocking.
As an artist, you step outside your comfort zone and you perform in different roles. And in early 60s, in 1960 itself, I can see why they would have had to put that disclaimer at the beginning of a movie.
Right.
But
okay.
The good news is the movie had Shirley Jones, and her role as Lulu Baines got her a Best Supporting Actress.
Plus, I want to let you know something else from her book. You know, Shirley writes that people didn't consider her to be anything but a singer who starred in musicals.
Exactly.
So this part came about because she wanted to prove that she was a serious actress, that she could do serious drama and be taken seriously. So this was why she accepted this role in this movie. Even though it wasn't the main role, it was a serious role. So this is what she wanted to try out. You don't want to sit there and be typecast. Right.
She did not want to be typecast as Roger Hammerstein singing leading lady. That's all she was doing. And she moved into Elmer Gantry. And she, the few scenes she had, she did well with them. She really did do well with those scenes.
But I thought it was funny when she took this part, she got a call from Burt Lancaster. Okay. She said she was doing some other show at a hotel. And the phone rang, and he said, this is Burt Lancaster. And she said, Burt Lancaster? Burt Lancaster? My teen idol? Must be a joke. Aww. And she hung up on him.
Oh, no.
Shirley has her own teen idols also. Burt Lancaster was one of her teen idols. I thought that was cute. Everybody has a teen idol, apparently.
Everybody does.
Yes.
Yeah. And that the movie, Elmer Gantry, it wasn't what I thought it was, but I thought it was pretty good for 1960. It told a good story, and it reminds me that you can sell everything. That's what it was. They were selling. Right, wrong, or indifferent, that's what the plot of the movie was.
Yeah, and Burt Lancaster wanted her to play this role. He picked her for this role. That's why he called her. And he says, I would like you to think about playing this role of Lulu Baines. Can you come, you know, out and meet Richard Brooks, who was the director?
Well, that's, see, he knew that she could step outside of that role of the musical girl and play such a very dramatic role.
Yep, and then she won her Oscar. Actually, for that movie, she won Best Supporting Actress.
Yes.
And Burt Lancaster won, he won Best Actor for that. It also won Best Screenplay based on material from another medium. It won 3 awards for that movie.
Yeah, it was a book. And the book was actually pretty short, if I remember correctly. The book was only like a little over 100 pages.
It was also nominated for Best Motion Picture, but it didn't win. I'm not sure what movie won that year.
Yeah.
But it was up for 5 awards. And other awards, too, with other award shows, Golden Globes.
The Golden Globes.
You know, it was appearing in a lot of, even British Academy Film Awards, it was up for.
It was very highly acclaimed.
Yeah, it did win.
It won a lot of awards.
Yeah, Golden Globes, it did win Best Actor in a Motion Picture. So Burt Lancaster won a few awards there.
That's great.
Yeah, well, I'm always a little bit different, I guess, than the norm because I couldn't watch it.
That's okay. So. But, you know, every movie's not for everybody.
But I brought up, and maybe we could segue back to this, the traveling salesman, that in this movie, Elmer Gantry was a traveling salesman. And I guess you can sell anything to anybody.
Right.
And I bring that up because the next movie we're going to talk about is The Music Man.
The Music Man.
Yes, Cindy, yes. I love this one.
Now, The Music Man came out in 1962, and it was a movie starring Robert Preston as Harold Hill, and Shirley Jones was Marion.
The librarian. Yes.
That's
and
funny.
It had little Ronnie Howard in it as her little brother Winthrop.
So cute.
Yeah, she loved working with him.
1962, she did The Music Man. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about what The Music Man is about, and then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, girls, I like this movie a lot.
Okay, so The Music Man is a musical with book, music, and lyrics by Meredith Wilson. And it's based on a story by Wilson and Franklin Lacey. The plot concerns a con man, Harold Hill, who poses as a boys' band organizer and leader and sells band instruments and uniforms to naive Midwestern town folk. So Meredith Wilson was inspired by his Mason City, Iowa town to write and compose the music for The Music Man. The Music Man is set in Iowa. It's about this guy, Robert Preston's character, Hill. He's running around all over the country selling something that he can't produce. Music, he can't give music lessons. He's not a musician, but he makes people believe it. Remember another movie based in the early 1900s that won the Academy Award for Jodie Foster, Paper Moon?
Yes.
Her dad was a traveling salesman in the movie. They ran around selling Bibles.
Hmm.
Everybody was traveling salesmen in those days. You got Robert Preston, who plays Harold Hill. Harold Hill is the band leader. And he's trying to make all these people believe that they could get their boys in the town to play instruments.
Right.
Now, the reason he wants them to do that, why? Why would all these people want their kids playing instruments? Because a pool table comes to town.
Yeah, the pool table. It was coming to town, and he wanted them to think differently.
And he wanted them to believe, and this is the lead-in to my favorite song of the movie, he wanted them to believe that that pool table was trouble. The song in the movie, The Music Man, is called You Got Trouble.
You got trouble.
Oh, we got trouble.
Right here in River River City.
South River City.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool.
That stands for pool.
We surely got trouble.
We surely got trouble.
Right here in River City.
Right here.
Remember the Maine, Plymouth Rock, and the Golden Rule.
Our children gonna have trouble.
Oh, we got trouble. We're in terrible, terrible trouble. That game with the 15 numbered balls is the devil's tool.
Devil's tool.
Oh, yes, we got trouble, trouble, trouble.
And it goes, you got trouble, folks, right here in River City. Trouble with the capital T, and that rhymes with P, and that stands for pool. He goes through the whole opening scene singing this story on how this pool hall is going to make these boys just the worst people in the world, and they need to be in a band. Just
yeah.
Get them out of that pool
just
hall.
To organize them somehow.
So what I saw with it, Doris, was that there was a bunch of these guys. They were on the train. They were going to Iowa. At first, everyone is very rude to him, the salesman that you're talking about. Shirley plays the librarian, and Marion.
Marion,
you're in the librarian.
Yeah, she was willed these books, I guess, but not the library. The library was willed to the whole town, but she received the books. So she was this bright woman that knew exactly what she wanted and lived in books, you know. So you can think of other people that are similar to her, you know, with their expectations. Well, Shirley's mom wants her to find a man, but that no man, she told her daughter this, no man was ever going to add up to her. Is that her aunt or was that her mom?
That's her mom. And that leads me to a good, I mean, that is her mom. But go ahead with your story. I have a good theory on that.
Okay. But her mom was frustrated because she wanted her to find a man. But Shirley makes fun of the salesman that everyone is liking. And she is smart aleck to him, just like she is in the Oklahoma show.
She's not buying his con.
No, she's not going to. She goes, I am not going to be like everyone. And I'm not going to be someone that likes your voice and gives you compliments, blah, 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 blah. And yet that's what he did. He would go around and give music, not give them, but he would compliment people. He would even tell them that their cheek muscles were good. And so that would sell an instrument to them. At first, they were defensive like her. And then they would change.
He
would
sold
convince
them. He convinced them.
He knew how to sell things. And he'd get those signatures. And he would tell them that they're going to get their instrument someday. But it was funny to see. It was funny to see Shirley dancing in the library. And then the guys dancing with him, too. Which, how does that go with the whole movie? But it was cute.
Marion had a dance scene in the library.
Yes, that was funny.
With all the other people who were at the library. But the funniest part about it, okay, so you have Marion.
Mm-hmm.
You have Ronnie Howard, her little brother Winthrop, and you mm-hmm. have her mother. Now, there's an internet theory. I'm not saying I buy it. It's just one of these little internet theories. Theories that's out there. If you read deep enough about the movie The Music Man, you can find all these theories. But Marion is old enough to be Winthrop's mother.
Right.
So the theory goes, the man who willed Marion the books was her lover. And Marion got pregnant and was sent away.
That's the theory.
And then she had Winthrop, and her mom raised Winthrop as her son and Marion as her daughter. And that's one of the, I'm just telling you, you could find a little hidden dark theory.
Well, I was kind of confused about it too, because it does look like, okay, her mom and then her and then the little kid would be her kid, Shirley's son.
It would be Marion's son, and Winthrop is all of maybe 5.
Yeah.
And Marion is all of maybe 25.
Right.
So you have.
But she does say that in the movie, though. She's, this is my brother.
Yes. And everyone
she does
knows.
Call him that.
But think about it. There are these gossip women in town. And there's even a whole scene in the movie about them clucking. They cluck like chickens. And there's a scene.
Oh, their hats.
Yes.
When you saw their hats.
Yeah.
Yes.
So on the top of their hat, they were chickens.
So they hint that the gossip women believe that Marion did not go away to do whatever she did. That Winthrop is her son. And that's what happened. And that's why they believe the man left her the books. And that's the hint.
No, I did not.
The behind the scenes little.
Get that. Interesting.
If you read enough about the Music Man, those are all little backstory behind the scene hints that they tell you. And you have, I love this movie. I really do. I watch it every July 4th on Turner Classic Movies. It's such a great pick-me-up movie for me. I love all the songs in it. You can't help singing 76 trombones. It's such a good movie.
Yeah. I liked it. I like that one. That was the first one I watched, and I like that one. But I see with all these movies, the same, storyline type.
I actually, when I was reading Shirley's book, I read that she said that she loved that little boy. You know, he knew his lines really well.
Oh, and he was very professional.
Ronnie Howard. He was shy. His dad was on the set all the time. So she liked that. But she was also pregnant in the movie, and she did not want to talk about that or let anybody know.
Right.
And then towards the end, she had to. They had to hide the pregnancy. But I know that she decided to take, was it the producer, invited the producer to a lunch where she would tell him. And she knew that he wouldn't cast her out by this time because she had already done too many scenes. But Shirley warned that she wasn't, that this was happening. And so they had to film her from the waist up, like we were saying. Also, she had warned them of something else. She warned them that she wasn't a dancer. But then she was told by the time the movie was finished that she'd be the best one around.
She held her own.
Yeah, she said in the book, I'm truly not a dancer, but she did take lessons.
Yeah.
And this movie, this is where that story comes from, that popular story about Patrick.
Yes.
There was a popular story about Patrick. They were doing a scene at the bridge.
Embraced.
Yeah, they got close enough in an embracement, and then Patrick kicked him.
That's funny.
Yes.
Apparently, Patrick met him years later and said,
"Hey, I kicked you."
A formal introduction, and yeah, that was kind of funny. Not a lot of people knew she was pregnant in the movie, I guess.
But she knew by the time she would tell him and take him to lunch. She knew exactly how to do it. Well, it sounds like Shirley, she was very professional and she knew the time. So it all worked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that kind of leads me in a little bit to another movie that was made in 1963 that we didn't watch, but it's called The Courtship of Eddie's Father. And it had a TV show based on this movie. The TV show had Bill Bixby as the leading guy, Tom, and you had Brandon Cruz was his son, Eddie. Well, in the movie, The Courtship of Eddie's Father, Glenn Ford played the father and Ronnie Howard played Eddie. And it was
Ronnie.
Yeah. His name in the credits back then was Ronnie Howard. It's a fun movie. Again, it's not a musical. It's a movie comedy, and it's about this widowed man, and he's trying to get remarried. And there's this kind of snooty lady. I think he's even planning to marry her, but the woman doesn't get along with Eddie. Well, Shirley Jones's character lives next door. Her name is Elizabeth. And the whole time, she's right up under the dad's nose. The whole time, he's seeing all these women. And I think in the end, they wind up together.
That show.
It's a really cute movie, and it does have a lot of good scenes. But Ronnie Howard got to work with Shirley Jones a second time. And he was really good in The Music Man, and he held his own very well in The Courtship of Eddie's Father.
Well, girls, all of this is such an honor to Shirley. I know that she is getting ready to have her 90th birthday.
Today we covered just a few of Shirley's accomplishments. We talked about Oklahoma. We talked about The Music Man. We talked about Elmer Gantry, which won her an Academy Award. We have just started. We're going to do the second half of her life.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about Shirley as a mom, right. Shirley as a wife, and what happened after these movies.
After these movies, because there was more. This is just the beginning.
Yes.
So we hope that you will tune in for part two.
And we hope you really enjoyed this discussion about the early career of Shirley Jones.
Thank you from the bottom of our teen dream hearts. Keep on crushing.
Always believe in magic.
And have a peaceful, shantastic week. And don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and subscribe to our new YouTube page.
Make sure to keep in touch with us at our email, shantsquadsociety@gmail.com.
The Shant Squad Society podcast, including past, present, and future versions, and its contents are owned and controlled by the Shant Squad Society. The podcast is written, produced, and recorded at the Borden Studios, and the views and opinions are solely those of the Shant Squad Society podcast. We may think we are always right, but we may get things wrong from time to time, so we assume no responsibility for errors of submission of content.